This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is your home stuck in a style slump? Well, 2026 is your year because Bob's Discount Furniture has incredible finds that pack a style punch and won't drain your bank account. We're talking statement pieces like the gorgeous Sofia sofa and loveseat with channel tufting and super comfy Bobo-pedic cushions, or a farmhouse storage bed that hides the mess and still looks beautiful. Want to cozy things up? Snag an electric fireplace and make your home feel like an actual hug. They've even got the latest technology. Their showcase immersive sofa has Bluetooth audio, heated seats, massage, power recline, and LED lights. It's like having a movie theater in your home. Make 2026 the year you love your home. Get your picks in 26 at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
Oh, could this vintage store be any cuter?
Right? And the best part? They accept Discover.
Accept Discover? In a little place like this? I don't think so, Jennifer.
Oh, yeah, huh? Discover's accepted where I like to shop. Come on, baby, get with the times.
Right, so we shouldn't get the parachute pants?
These are making a comeback. I think.
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
The following session of Radios and Tunnels contains a few choice expletives due to the passionate nature of the conversation. So if you're easily offended by the occasional or perhaps a, then by all means, adjust your listening expectations and all-around reception strategy for this particular session accordingly.
Radios and Tunnels. So I'm a disciple of Dave Chappelle. I'm a part of the cult. Not that he has a cult following, it's not like an underground guy, but he is our cult leader. We will pretty much follow him anywhere he goes. What he says, how he says it, it almost always seems to resonate with me. There's things I disagree with, but not to the point where it makes me angry. Like, God, Dave has done me wrong this time. I've never felt that way about him. But I saw the huge backlash on the internet over his special Sticks and Stones before I actually watched it. Now, the last round of specials on Netflix, Equanimity and The Bird Revelation, both of those, you know, really ruffled some feathers, so to speak, pun intended. But it wasn't like Sticks and Stones has been. People are flipping out over it. In fact, when I started to watch it with my wife, she made me turn it off after about 10 minutes because it was offending her. And she's a big Dave Chappelle fan. I've watched all of his specials with her. So I wanted to watch it and talk about it. And when I saw it, I was blown away. To me, it was the equivalent to watching a guy set himself on fire. Like, he was challenging you to be offended and then do something about it. But it was done in typical Dave fashion. And even when the jokes are offensive, he says them in a way where you can't help but laugh. And to me, whenever I engage with his material, it always makes me think about a lot of different things. So I wanted to do a podcast on it. This podcast right here, Radios and Tunnels. I'm Jeff Skin Wade, and we talk about a lot of different things. We bring guests on to do it. And this week, I brought on comedian Paul Varghese, who has opened for Dave Chappelle on numerous occasions. I really love his work. He's a friend. I love talking to him. And we dove in head first to break down Dave Chappelle's Sticks and Stones.
So, Paul, with Sticks and Stones, I'm assuming you've seen the vast majority of Dave's stuff.
Yes.
How you've opened for him.
Yeah.
A bunch, or was it? I saw you at the House of Blues open for him.
Yeah, I did Dallas, and then the very next day we did Austin, which was one of the things that back in 2013 went kind of internet viral.
Yep.
Because he got heckled there, which I was there. He didn't get heckled, but he literally came in with like no material. He was just riffing to the crowd.
Which I loved at that time.
Yeah, because, well, remember when you were at the Dallas House of Blues?
Yeah, okay. It was announced on Sunday night, and you had to buy tickets in 10 minutes, and then he hit the stage Monday night.
Yeah, it was sold out in like, 30 minutes, whatever. I got the call that morning on Monday. I was in Tucson, Arizona. And they were like, hey, do you want to fly down to open for Chappelle? It doesn't pay that much, but I was like, okay. So I was supposed to be in New Mexico that night, and I bought like a Delta flight. It was $1,000. To fly one way from Delta, like on 2 hours notice. And it's like this so weird serendipitous thing where we're in the plane and I'm sitting there and this guy next to me is like, you look stressed. And I was like, man, I'm about to do this. And he was like, well, and he gave me like this whole pep talk. And I was like, if you want to come to the show, you can. I'll sneak you in. And he showed up. I never saw the guy again. Never texted me again.
But so wait, you snuck in random plane flight Delta passenger, dude?
That's the brown in me. Like I sneak people past security, and that's why we're in the mess that we're in right now.
Oh my God, that's so great. So did you have any sort of relationship with Dave or his people, or how did that even happen?
So in Dallas and all that stuff, I mean, I have an okay name as a comic here. So people are just like, hey, we want to impress him. Let's bring the guy that we know can be nice and be cool with him and do his thing. And so I went up there 35 minutes, whatever, before even you were at the show.
Yeah, I saw you. It was a great set.
I literally flew in. I landed 30 minutes before that set. My cousin picked me up. We come in, do the set. And Chappelle hadn't been in Dallas since probably 03 at that point. So like, I always compare it to like my grandfather. My grandfather's been dead since 73. And every year that he's been dead, he just becomes like this godlike figure. Mm-hmm. The stories just get like Paul Bunyan size.
Right.
I think that's how Chappelle was. People couldn't believe he was there. I mean, you were there.
Yeah.
He just took a drag on a cigarette and they were screaming laughing. I'm like, what is this?
Right. And that's part of like kind of what we want to talk about too. There's a lot of things to talk about, but he has attained cult-like status, but that has been in the crosshairs the last couple years. And then it's totally been exacerbated by this latest special, Sticks and Stones, on Netflix. And so I knew I wanted to talk about it.
Yeah.
And I was trying to think of who would be a great person to talk to about this. I was like, hell, Paul knows how to put together a set. Yeah. He's worked with Dave. He's done race humor, which I'm a huge fan of when it's done by people that know how to do it.
Exactly. There's nuance.
There's
people
nuance
don't
to
understand.
It. Right. And so just to give you the lay of the land, you know, me and my wife are both big fans. Mm-hmm. And we've turned it on. And she's kind of on her phone, kind of watching it, kind of not watching it.
Okay.
And then I had my buddy KT, you know KT, our producer, he had texted me. He's like, bro, this Dave shit is wild.
Okay.
And I was like, okay. And I'd seen that, you know, I hadn't really like gone and read articles, but you can just say now trending. And there's all these people wildly overreacting to it.
Yeah.
So we're 10 minutes into it and we get to the Michael Jackson stuff.
Okay.
And my wife is like, can you turn this off? I can't do this. Right. Now, this is someone who's a fan of Dave Chappelle.
Okay.
Like I can push the envelope with her on edgy stuff.
Yeah.
But that was too much for her. Now, she was watching it half-assed, but there was an element to it, and she really threw herself into that Finding Neverland stuff.
I gotcha.
But she was like, you got to turn this off. I can't watch this.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, okay, I'll respect that, and I had to go back and watch it on my own.
Okay.
And then I was like, there's so many layers and elements to this.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about. So what is your initial reaction to seeing it, knowing, because I know that you'd seen some of the hype too.
Yeah. Seeing the whole special or that bit in particular?
Let's start about the whole special.
I loved it. It doesn't shock me. I mean, I've seen comics here in the city, and myself included, that say way more shocking and offensive things, but we don't have a big enough name to where anybody would care. I've said way more offensive stuff than he has up on stage, and so none of it really shocked me. But I was kind of like her when you initially told me about this. I had only seen clips that were spread on social media. So you see him do a joke about the Michael Jackson thing, but you only see half of it. So you're like, in your head, you're thinking, the first thing is like, oh, you know what? This caption said, look at this insensitive joke about Michael Jackson.
Right.
So that's already in your head. That's the first filter you're watching it through.
Right.
And then you see like that line. You don't see any context of how he explains it and what he's saying. Because the whole special, he apologizes for everything he says. And he does that kind of what he thinks, that little kind of devilish drop my head, look my eyes up and smile like, mm-hmm. Hey, I'm just kidding. And he'll do that thing where he runs. The only thing I hated about, I was offended by the fact that every punchline, he slapped his knee and ran to the back of the stage.
Right.
We always call that the Ron White whiskey indicator. When anytime Ron White wants you to laugh, he'll take a sip of whiskey.
Okay.
It's like the punchline indicator.
Right,
that's
right.
Like the, and he did
it's
that.
His laugh track.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So you can't help. You're like conditioned to do that.
Yeah.
And I know, I mean, there's a couple of comics, big name comics, that when they say something that they want the crowd to laugh at, they'll slap their knee.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't believe I said that. I'm like, Dave, you know, you knew what you were going to say.
Right.
But he's doing that because he feels that they're going to turn on him.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's to me was sort of the whole tone of everything was he's playing this up as you're about to get me. Because one of the things that happened with his, was it Equanimity? And I forgot the name of the other one.
They all sound like Outkast albums, right?
What's that? Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And I know you're an old hip hop head like me. Yeah. I didn't realize, I saw it at the end of this one. I don't know how long he's been doing the X-Clan Vanglorious.
Yeah,
this is protected by the red.
Yeah.
It's got that great logo.
Yeah.
And he says Crossroads, so the C hits the logo.
Yeah.
If you're not an old hip hop fan of the early 90s, late 80s stuff, you're really confused by what we're
this
talking
was
about.
Presented to you by the red. Yeah, sponsored by the red. What was it? Red, white.
The red, the black, and the green.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's this
with
great.
Key, sissy, yeah.
With a key, a sissy. It's a great group X-Clan from the late 80s, early 90s. But that to me, that was very much of he went into it like, hey, I'm going to piss you all off and you're going to come get me, so I'm ready to run from it.
Yeah.
He, you know, he's kind of positioned himself with the backlash, especially when he hit on it, the trans jokes he dropped last time.
Yeah.
That was the first time I remember people from whatever you want to say, the left, or people that normally completely has his back kind of turning on him a little bit.
Yeah. But also, like I saw CK when he was here in July.
Did you? How'd that go?
Oh, it was awesome. I loved it. But I'm also able to separate the person from the art. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I mean, you've told me yourself that Q-Tip is not the nicest person to meet. But
you don't want to see how the sausage is made.
Yeah.
You know? But
I enjoy Low End Theory. I know every lyric on it.
Right.
So, but I don't. I don't mix those.
Yeah.
So with CK, I was like, well, they're like, well, he needs to be more authentic in how he apologizes because, you know, I mean, I can't say what he says, but he does a three-line apology, not even apology. He just says it like Louis CK would apologize, and then he goes into his act. And like, I'm not condoning what he did, but I'm not encouraged by it. I'm like, that set is a great set. If that was anybody else's set, it would be a great set. And so with Chappelle, I mean, it's, I don't know how to explain it, but like, I don't know. I don't think he's trying to do any of that stuff on purpose, but he's also definitely trying to be more likable than CK is.
Because
he kind of throws CK under the bus a little bit.
Yeah, you know what I mean? while saying, you know, said like, that he died in a horrible masturbation accident.
Yeah, yeah. But like I kind of want to hear Chris Rock's version of Louis CK because they're best friends.
I mean,
they write together.
Right.
But I think even Chris, I mean, Tambourine came out. Chris didn't bring it up. I think that happened around the same time, right?
I haven't seen Chris's newest stuff.
So I saw him at Windstar, which
oh, cool!
I don't like that venue for stand up. It feels like I'm in a hotel ballroom.
Okay, so yeah, that it's that. So I did. I was trying to think of comedians. I did see. I'm blanking on his name now.
What did he look like?
Dude from 30 Rock and Saturday Night Live.
Tracy Morgan.
Yes, thank you. I saw Tracy Morgan there and it was great, but he sat in a chair.
Yeah, of course.
Because of been through the accident and all that.
I think that's a new thing. Like, since Cosby can't perform anymore, Tracy Morgan gets in a bus accident, so he has to sit in a chair. Now Kevin Hart's in traction. I'm like, you guys just all want to sit on stools that Cosby vacated. I think that's what it is.
And it's so interesting, too, because Kevin Hart got brought up in the special, and Louis C.K. got brought up in this special.
So there's always a pet peeve of kind of like, I hate when comedians talk about comedy, you know, like as a joke. Because as much as Kevin Hart would be like, hey, that's great, it's still, why are you bringing me up in your special?
Yeah.
I don't bring you up in mine.
Right.
But I also, you got to realize that, like, I think people take fame, they look at fame as quality. You know what I mean? Like, I like the special, but it's not the greatest of all time.
Okay, so that's another element to this that I was thinking about the way in which I relate to this material.
Yeah.
And you can relate to this material because you've accrued some modicum of fame, whatever you want to call it, recognizability, ounce. Those sorts of things. But you know, I'm locally, like my kids always go, are you famous? I'm like, no, I'm locally recognizable because of the job that I have. Yeah. But what that does do is it does put a target on me.
Of course.
And so I kind of feel like I can relate to this material on a much, much smaller level.
Yeah.
But there's an element to it of where I do operate in a realm of if I say the wrong thing, I'm going to lose my Mavs gig and I'm going to lose my radio gig.
Yeah.
And I have principles that I feel strongly about, but am I willing to lose my car and my house over those principles?
Yeah.
And so on a, so maybe I'm over glorifying Dave here,
okay,
but I felt like there was an element to this of, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to talk about canceling and how ridiculous it is, and then I'm going to go out there and see if I can get canceled.
Well, I would agree with that if he didn't apologize for everything he's saying. Because even when he did the LGBT thing,
right?
Because, you know, again, I'd only seen a clip and read blogs, and all the blogs, I mean, I think we all know this. If you say something negative on a blog, everybody clicks on it.
Like, yeah.
I have a comedian friend of mine who lives in New York. I don't know if we're friends, but whatever, that I know that writes for a clickbait site. So he writes under a female pseudonym. It's weird, but he makes so much money. Like, there was an article that went viral about 4 or 5 years ago about he uses some female pseudonym, and it was like, why you should never tip your waiter. I don't know if you saw that when
it went
viral, but service industry went crazy. It got like a million hits, and everybody commenting, this person's such an asshole, blah, blah, blah. But every time they clicked on and shared it, he gets like a nickel.
Are you serious?
Yeah, they get money off. It's like clicking on a website. So he just, whatever he can stoke the fire with. And I think that's why how Jezebel and, you know,
that's Huffle, so a lot of those, insane.
It's creepy. But he told us, like, our job is to try to agitate people, because the more YouTube clicks you get, the more you know, it's always like when it's like, you know, this, what's seeing stuff on YouTube is always like today, this morning, like the Cowboys thing, it was like shocked. It's like in caps lock, shocked. Dak Prescott did this. It makes you want to click it if you're...
Yeah, right.
You know, and every click generates, you know, every hit gets more money for them. And so I think with the backlash with Chappelle, it's like, if we say he's great, who's going to click on that thing? Nobody cares that you're great.
Yeah.
If the Cowboys are 8-0 and you say the Cowboys are a fake 8-0...
Right. Here's their fatal flaw.
Yeah. Everybody clicks on that. I mean, Deadspin's notorious for every year they do 10 reasons your team sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do it right. They do it with the Patriots, but it's like... But I click on it. I'm contributing a nickel or a penny, whatever it is.
Please agitate me.
Yeah. But I think we also live in the era of like hyperbole, where like we want to live in this generation where like, no, everything our generation does is way better than yours.
Right.
And honestly, I don't think we really have, like, there's so many great comics that just aren't famous enough that have way better specials. And that's not a knock on Dave.
I mean, right.
Dave is so, we're talking about the Joan Rivers thing when I used to work with her. I've worked with pretty big name comics, but Joan and Dave are iconic.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different level of fame.
Right.
I've worked with, you know, Fluffy, Gabriel Iglesias, Angela, mm-hmm. all these people who were, they're on the Forbes list. They're not that famous. That, like, the Joan Rivers level of famous is like, I've never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
She can't go anywhere.
You're a little bit younger than me, but I mean, I knew who Joan Rivers was when I was like 9 years old. She used to go on Carson all the time.
If you saw her set, I would always say that. I said this to her. It's like, if anybody ever live tweeted your set or even video recorded your set, she would have been gone. It's the most, and look, I'm 18 years in. I'm not sensitive to anything. I've heard everything. I have the most offensive material ever if I want to do it. It's the most offensive set I've ever seen.
And wow.
I'm not offended.
Yeah.
It's just,
okay, that's ultimately kind of what this is about, is the idea on some level.
Yeah.
You know, you project your own meaning or attach your own meaning to things, but there's a lot of this of, hey, we're doing comedy, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're going to try to go get someone canceled or taken off or whatever because the joke is not to your sensibilities.
But again, he apologizes mm-hmm. for it, but people are seeing what I saw initially. I saw clips without the context of what was said.
Right.
So I can see why they would get mad and immediately rush to judgment. It's like when somebody tunes into your show, 2 minutes in, you're halfway through something, they hear one line, and then all of a sudden you see the text machine.
I can't tell you how many people said, it's this. I was like, yeah, I said that 4 minutes ago,
exactly.
You moron.
Exactly.
Why are you yelling at me right now?
So with Joan Rivers, she doesn't apologize for any of it. Like, I can't say it, but this is literally how she opens her set. She walks up and she goes, hi, everybody goes crazy. And she goes, okay, let's just get this out the way. And she goes through every single racial and gender slur, every single one, like hard R's. Like, she's hitting the consonants hard. I mean, she just does it. Place goes nuts.
Okay? Yeah.
Nuts. But I know her. So, I mean, I knew her, but she doesn't mean it.
Yeah.
But they came for that. But she's literally, she doesn't apologize and say, I'm sorry. It doesn't say at the end, we should all love each other. There's no message. She's like, how much can I pitch? Like, just... I mean, she's making fun of the people in the audience. Like,
okay, so, and Dave does that at the beginning, too. Remember his two imitations?
Yeah, the second imitation.
And the second imitation is, I'm imitating you trying to ruin me.
Yeah, because he even talks, when he does talk to the Netflix crowd, you clicked on my face.
Right. Which you asked for this.
Which don't you think that part of that is like, that really did hurt his feelings, that people were bashing him?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because, so I'll say this, and I always try to be as... analytical and removed as these from these things I can be because I am a middle class white male, heterosexual white male, raised as a Christian. So I am the very opposite of whatever otherness is.
Yeah.
So whenever, and I engage with a lot of this material because I grew up in the rap world and, you know, the kind of people that I admire exist outside of that. So I always try to be as, you know, hey, this is not coming from my perspective. So I need to be aware of these kinds of things.
Yeah.
But with, you know, Chappelle, I feel like, cause I get upset by this too. When I get, someone says, well, you're a racist. I'm like, dude, no, I'm not. I'm like making strong efforts to not be racist. However, I realized how I was raised.
Yeah.
And so whatever my base instincts are, I'm constantly examining those things. And so when Chappelle came under fire a couple of years ago, he's like, do you not realize what I've done?
Yeah.
Like, do you not realize my track record?
Yeah.
And suddenly I'm the scorn of this. Like, you guys are turning your targets on me. There's other people you can turn your targets on that deserve to be in that scope. I do not.
Yeah.
And I think you're right. I think he got hurt his feelings over that.
Yeah. It's funny because you see it. You're like, I think he's trying to act like it didn't. But it obviously did if it made it into his special.
I almost think that's what his special is about.
Yeah, and the ironic thing is...
Sticks and Stones. The thing is called Sticks and Stones.
I did love how he opened it, because I loved him, you know, kind of half-singing Prince.
Right. About Judgment Day. The song about Judgment Day.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not an accident.
Like, he wants to escape his destruction, but he doesn't really want to leave, or I forgot the name of the...
Yeah.
I forgot the exact lyrics in 1999, but the ironic thing is, because I, you know, our social media is like, you forget that, like, maybe 1% of the world is on social media. Like, for us, it's our world.
We think,
oh, this is the opinion of the masses.
Oh, and it's so immediate.
Yeah. And no, that's not really like, I don't know what the scope of people, what people really think about stuff. But the comics are becoming, ironically, they don't even know this, because a lot of comes on Twitter, they're becoming the exact thing Chappelle is making fun of, which, if you don't get his special, you're stupid. You don't know anything. You don't know comedy. I'm like, you're becoming exactly the cancel. Maybe the people they're criticizing don't have anything you can cancel, but you're still turning this polarizing hate towards something like, people can disagree with you. It's fine. But look, Chappelle's not a bad dude. He's not a bad dude. And again, he apologizes for everything he says. It's different than like, I don't understand why, like, and I like Anthony Jeselnik, but he's not apologizing for what he says, and he says some really dark stuff.
Right.
But he's not under fire because he's not famous enough.
Right.
Which is stupid.
This is about people turning on their hero.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
I'm sorry to interrupt you,
but so that bit he does about gun violence in schools.
Yeah.
And gun violence in general, right? Yeah. And then after the show, you know, makes its way to Netflix, he goes back to his hometown after that happens, that horrible weekend, and has this massive fundraiser that he fronts the money for.
Yeah.
You know, but he's doing comedy about that and the hopelessness of that.
Yeah.
But then he's not acting hopeless. He's trying to engage.
Yeah. But that's, unless Netflix puts that part on the special, nobody's going to know.
Right.
You know?
If you're listening and you don't know, Dave Chappelle put all of his money to do a big thing in Dayton. Yes.
Yeah.
And bring all these people together. Yeah. And if you're watching his special, he's got this sort of funny distance of, you know, well, hey, son, if the shooter comes to school, you better duck because your daddy talks a lot of trash. They're coming after you.
Yeah. He's self-aware.
Yeah.
He's incredibly self-aware. I don't know if it's like, I always remember this one CK line where he talked about the reason people are so mean on social media is because you don't have to see somebody's face.
Right.
And if you saw somebody's facial reactions when they said that, that you wouldn't say stuff like that. But we turned into like this. Again, it's Cowboys Eagles. You can't be the middling, you know, Minnesota Vikings. You're either on this side or that side.
I've never had anybody ever, ever in doing this, you know, publicly for, you know, whatever it's been, 16, 17 years, I've never had anybody come up to me and say anything even remotely critical to me.
Yeah.
There was one guy that I'd known for a long time and we had a great debate. And then, this is back in the message board days.
Yeah.
The next day he went on the message board and said, man, I met Skin. He was actually a pretty good guy. I was surprised.
You know,
but I've never had anybody come up and say the things they say on social media.
It's made me paranoid because, like, you know, when I took the lift here, the guy was like, Paul Varghese, how you doing? I was like, oh, what show did you see? I instantly am waiting for him to say, like, I saw you when you were, like, trashed over at Twilight. Like, I'm waiting for that. But you're right. Nobody ever says it in public. It's when you post a show online and all of a sudden here come the random messages like, I saw this dude 8 years ago at the Granada and he was awful. I'm like, I don't need that.
Right.
And on Chappelle's level, it's times 50.
Do you put a wall up? Are you okay engaging with that? Does it hurt your feelings?
When YouTube first went like big in 04, somebody like slammed me bad. And I remember commenting back, and I remember my buddy telling me, he's like, dude, they think you live like on like a pedestal. Like you're in the Taj Mahal, dude. They don't think you have time to even read the comments. So the second you do that, all of a sudden you're back like in a trailer in Mesquite, dude. Like he's one of us. So they don't think you're, so what I sent that, and he was like, don't do it again. And then like a week later, the guy writes an apology. Hey, I didn't know you were reading this. And so I try not to engage in it, but we're in this level of like trolling is like, it's like not considered bad.
Yeah.
Like, people are like, hey, I trolled Kanye West today. Like, why would you do that, dude? Like, why?
So I do not block anybody on Twitter.
Okay.
Unless they say something so overtly racist.
Okay.
Or like so extremely sexist.
Yeah.
That I'm like, I just don't want to see that. But what I do is I mute them.
Okay.
So I don't have to see it, but they don't get the satisfaction of, yes, he blocked me. So it's like a dog just barking into the, you know, at the moon, just barking into the wind. It's like
the last word thing kills me. I have to get the last word.
Yeah, right.
You can't get the last word. Like, because on stage, I mean, I get heckled a lot, especially the stuff you haven't seen my channel now, but it's way edgier than it was before. I talk about like police brutality and stuff, and I expect to get heckled up there, but I know how to handle a heckler. But online, like, you know, I remember posting this thing. Do you remember when Trump had like Kid Rock and like Kid Rock and somebody else at the White House?
Yes.
And they're all looking over like these blueprints for something. Do you remember that?
Like, yes.
It was Kid Rock and I can't remember who the other two people were. And I made a meme and it was like, he's like, so where should the above ground pool go?
Right.
Like, I put that. I got flooded on Twitter. It went viral. Well, my version of viral, which is like 100 retweets, whatever. But people going, I just looked this guy up on YouTube. He's awful.
Right. You
know, I got called, I remember, I do it in a bit, I mentioned a bit now, but I got called a jungle bunny and stuff like this, and I made it into a joke now.
Right.
But it's like, I just made a dumb joke about above ground pools. Like,
this is amazing to me that, you know, we're to the, and this is again, we go back to canceling.
Yeah.
So I can't remember ever, and I've been watching it for 40 years,
okay.
I can't ever remember having a president engage with Saturday Night Live.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, dude, I remember, and it's bipartisan.
Yeah.
I remember, I'm old enough to remember, or at least seeing clips as a young man of Chevy Chase doing Gerald Ford.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Carter got killed. Mm-hmm. And Bill Clinton got killed. And Ronald Reagan got killed. And both George Bushes. This is bipartisan. Yeah.
But it is kind of funny. And look, political aside, they were scared to touch Obama.
Now,
Key and Peele nailed Obama.
Right.
Now, Key and Peele was the better sketch show during
the Obama years.
They killed it.
Yeah.
And they were scared to do it because Saturday Night Live, they're just on the air at this point. To me, it's like they're not really bringing anything fresh.
It's a placeholder.
Yeah, it is. I mean, what else would you put there? Unless Vince McMahon brings back Saturday Night's Main Event, what are you going to do, right?
It's interesting that you said Vince McMahon there because I was thinking about this earlier, and that is the Dice Clay era.
Okay.
Is there anything about that you find redeeming? Now, at the time, I was a teenage boy, so I thought it was genius.
Okay.
And then I go back and go, God, I was an idiot.
But weren't you laughing because he was cussing?
Yes. Well, and also, like, the novelty of the nursery rhyme.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it's stuff that you knew. Like, if your parent, like, if I ever have, I don't have any kids, but if I had a kid, I would introduce them to dirty stuff and tell them it was cool so they wouldn't listen to dirty stuff.
All right. Okay. That's interesting.
I mean?
Smoke this whole box of cigarettes.
Exactly.
Well, listen to this Andrew Dice Clay.
Yeah.
But at the time there was a Saturday Night Live female performer named Nora Dunn.
Yeah. Okay.
And she, when Dice Clay came to host, she refused to be on the show.
Okay.
And that was the first time, I don't know what I was, 16 or so. I don't know. But that was the first time I was like, okay. I didn't realize, okay, so this is bad beyond cussing. I had no idea.
Yeah. Because it doesn't personally affect you.
Right.
So
that's my point.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the demo where everything's been about me my benefit.
But there's also, like, you know, when I talk about race on stage, I know that I can feel it in the room that if I even say sometimes the word white, they're like, oh, he's going to start bashing us. That's the whole stereotype of comedy, is the non-white person always makes fun of the white person. It's
right.
Just, I mean, all of them do it.
Right.
Do. And it's always like, hey, they're lame. I never do that. I do a joke about, I'm ironically saying, I wish it was white because you guys can do flash mobs, like stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? But you know what I mean? But
yeah.
Because the second I say it, they're probably thinking, especially now in this era, they're like, oh, he's going to start bashing us, you know?
Right.
But I don't want anybody to ever feel, regardless of race, to feel excluded. But I don't know the line until I cross it, you know? But with Chappelle, he doesn't have to worry about it because he's made a lot of money. I mean, I'm still...
Right.
I can't get canceled. I'm done.
Yeah,
I mean,
no.
I'm barely held on by a string. If they cut that cord, I'm done.
Yeah. So, and that's why it is legitimately troubling. It is... So one of the things that I've watched recently that I absolutely love, and my thoughts are just... I keep going back to this, is this Rick Rubin documentary on Showtime. Shangri-La, have you seen it?
Yeah.
Okay, it's exceptional, like on a lot of different levels. And when you brought up Vince McMahon, I was thinking about Rick Rubin producing that Dice Clay record, but Rick Rubin's fascinated with wrestling.
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, this is not real. Like all this animus, this is not real. This is a projection and we're supposed to laugh at this.
But I think you'd be surprised how many people in the audience, like, so when Chappelle does the Chinese accent, right?
Yep.
And obviously he apologized. He's like, my wife is Asian. She hates that joke. What bothers me about that is, and again, the audience doesn't know the apology. They don't hear the apology, but their laughter. I remember watching this with, I remember having the same feeling two times. The very first time I did a joke, probably a few months in, I did a joke about the Indian accent sucks. Mm-hmm. And the laughter I got was them laughing at me like, oh yeah, we know it sucks. And I felt like shit. I was like, oh, this is the stuff that if somebody told me this that wasn't Indian, I would be like, what a racist thing to say. So why am I condoning it that it's okay to say it?
Okay, dude, have you ever seen Dave Chappelle on Inside the Actor's Studio after he quit the Chappelle Show?
And that's when we were smoking with James Lipton?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
And he had I thought about this a lot.
Okay.
A lot.
Okay.
But he was talking about doing a joke, and it may have been...
It was on the season that they cut short.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he was talking about, you know, doing live material and seeing the way certain white people laughed at his jokes about black people.
Yeah.
And like going, that's not laughing with us.
Yeah.
That guy is angry against black people.
Yeah.
And I'm seeing it and I'm going, man, I'm contributing to that. I'm stirring that up.
Because Chappelle has always been, you know, I've been doing stand-up since 01 when he was still doing clubs. He was always he's the black friend. Everybody. He's the college black friend.
Right.
You know, like there's 30 people at a party at UNT. Oh, this is my black friend. He's that guy. He just gets along with everybody. But you notice in
the even the Jim Brewer Stoner movie, right?
Like half-baked.
Yeah, right, right.
He's just a black friend.
Yeah.
And I remember, watching Sticks and Stones. If you watch the guy stage right, there's a white guy in the very front. And every time he talks about white people, he has this smug like when he talks about, like, you know, white people are the one that shoot up the schools or whatever, which is like an old joke that comics have been doing since I started.
Right.
You know, he has a smug look on his face because in his head, he doesn't want to laugh at that truth. He wants to laugh at something that's kind of that's how I took it when I saw
it. Yeah, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like how there's an Asian guy, if you remember, like on stage right, he stands up for everything. He's losing it because, I mean, I'm Indian, so I'm Asian too. We're in the outside minority looking at everything.
Right.
White people and black people, they're both silly to us because nobody even knows. We have Aziz Ansari. That's all we got.
Did you see the last Aziz Ansari special?
I'm an Aziz fan, man. And okay. I do a really good Aziz impression.
Really? Can I hear a little bit of it?
I mean... Wait, Cowboys won yesterday? Whoa! I could do that. All you need to say, whoa.
I would be interested because of the conversation we're having. I'd be interested in your opinion on the new one. Because it's the same thing. He got canceled, quote-unquote canceled, and then...
I have cousins that sound like him. Uh-huh. So there's a really, really weird thing with Indian kids that are born and raised here is like, it's kind of why I got drawn into hip hop is we don't fit in anywhere. We don't have any musicians, no artists, no actors, nobody, especially I was born in 77. So we have nobody until like now there's Mindy Kaling, but Mindy Kaling's like my age.
Right.
Aziz is my age.
Right.
But growing up, the closest I could identify was Chris Rock and 90s hip hop and 70s soul music. That's I'm like, oh, somebody Brown is doing something.
Right, right.
That's all I have.
This is...
I know we're going way off track.
But. No. I enjoy all these sort of engagements. So I'm curious. So one of the greatest comedy shows of all time is The Simpsons. Uh-huh. How does someone like you growing up feel about Abu being on The Simpsons?
So I didn't... That came out in 86, I guess?
Yes. So the full-time show was 89. I remember because I just gone off to college.
Okay.
But it appeared on Tracy Ullman show.
So I never thought much about it because, I mean, this is the era of we didn't have... the internet or we didn't have DVR. So if you watched it on Sunday, if you didn't catch it on Sunday, it was gone.
Right.
And so it never really bothered me until I started doing stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
Because even in college, I went to UNT. Nobody ever brought it up to me. nobody was doing saying that anything to my face. But when I was on stage, the comics would always be like, especially when I first started, was always like, hey, after I got off stage, they would be like, hey, give it up for, or they'd introduce me as, hey, this guy, you might have seen him at 7-Eleven. Like, that's their intro.
Because, are you serious?
Because that's what they, this is 01. I mean, there were no Indian, I was maybe one of three Indian comics in the country.
Wow.
Maybe three.
Yeah. And just so people, I don't even know if we established this, you grew up in Richardson like me. We went to the same high school. I'm older than you, so we didn't go to school together, but we had probably a similar upbringing from an environment standpoint.
Of course, yeah. We all lived in, we basically kind of lived in the suburbs.
Yes.
But I lived over by what we called like Little Vietnam, basically.
Okay.
Where the kids were had lunch plans, but they were wearing jabots. You know, that kind of stuff. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. So were you off like Walnut Hill?
Yes.
Yeah.
Where Boiling Crab is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it Boiling Crab?
Yeah, that's technically Garland, right?
Yeah. So we lived in Garland, but we were on the border.
Yeah.
And we went to Richardson. But when I was at school, I sat with all the kids who didn't speak English because nobody else to talk to me. But you don't think about being a minority. I never honestly thought about it until I was on stage doing stand-up. And I remember this so well. So I started in 01, June of 01. September 11th happens that year, obviously. I perform at Fat Tuesday was the urban night at the Improv.
Okay.
And that's where you cut your teeth. Basically, like if you're not black and you kill that room, you get vaulted to like, you can host, you can do whatever you want in the city at that point.
Yeah.
Nanette Lee was running at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Sold out. It's when she was on K104.
Yeah.
It was sold out. And they brought me up the week after 9/11. The intro was, this guy had nothing to do with 9/11. That was their intro for me. And then they always play like some Indian sample music where it's like, you know, Truth Hurts or whatever.
Right.
You know what I'm talking about?
Before Rakim starts rapping.
It's, right. Exactly. Before Thinking of a Master Plan comes in. So they do that stuff. I get in there and they're like groaning. I'm like now you could do it and it would be hacky, but it would be stupid because it's like we're just a little bit more mainstream than before.
Yeah.
Back then, I'm like 4 months into stand-up. I'm like, how do you handle getting booed right away off nothing I said?
Right. Hey, here's the enemy of America. Have at it, Paul.
Yeah, even though it's a different country, but you can't discuss nuance at that point.
No. If you're brown, you're grouped together with Middle East, and we got to ban you and all this kind of
crap. So, and this is 01 again, before like social media. So that's when I started writing the bit. I was like, man, I got to find a way to endear myself to the audience. But I write the dumb joke about Indian people and accents and stuff. And dude, that joke goes to the point of where I do, like, that's why you don't see Indian boy bands. And I was doing, like, do you remember that song by Shy, If I Ever Fall in Love?
Oh, yeah, of course.
So I did that first verse in, like, some hacky Apu accent. And they're laughing at me.
Yeah.
Like, I can just feel it. I can't tell you the difference with it, but it just, you can feel when they're laughing at you.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't ever want to do that. I never took Apu as, I was like, okay, it's a cartoon character. I mean, I'm not looking up to him, but I wouldn't want somebody to call me a 7-Eleven employee either.
You know? Right.
But you can't cancel him now. I mean, you can, I guess, but that doesn't change anything. It's in syndication.
This is one of the things I want to talk about. I mean, not necessarily with you right now, but just this whole thing where people get all up in arms about the past.
Yeah.
It's like, guess what? It's a racist country. It's been a racist country. Yeah. It's oppressed people.
Yeah.
So you can be in denial all you want and then freak out 10 years later. We go, oh, yeah, that's a really ugly part of our history.
Yeah.
And so to me, the way I look at some of these things, have you seen When They See Us? You need to see it if you haven't. It's on Netflix. It's a 4-part series.
That's the Central Park 5-1.
Yes.
Okay.
And man, it's it'll rip you up.
Yeah.
Like it's, oh my God. But one of the sensations I had in watching it was that story took place when I was graduating from high school.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's 1989.
Yeah.
And it's still relevant. Like right now.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, well, okay, if we're just going to keep repeating our horrible behaviors.
Yeah.
It's incumbent, and this is the problem with the current climate and the problem with canceling and the left canceling other people on the left and the people on the this is the problem is there, it's impossible to get progress if everyone is defensive and just defending their turf.
Of course.
And so the people that have been oppressed need to pull back a little bit on the attack. But in fairness, I understand that behavior because the people that have the control are not admitting what the problems are.
Yeah.
And so you're just in this perpetual state of repeating the same mistakes over and over and over and over, but we're a way more savvier collective than we used to be.
Yeah.
And social media has weaponized all this stuff.
Yeah.
So I feel like, not to be caustic or anything, but this whole idea of the tipping point, we're really rushing towards it at high velocity.
I don't think there's a solution.
Right.
I see it getting worse. I've had more arguments, after shows, people talking to me about why I should take race out of my act than I've ever had in the last
few
years.
And who are we doing that for? We're doing that for the people that don't want to deal with the reality because they're in a good position and they don't want their boat rocked.
I'm not saying anything like you would have to really read into my stuff to be like I know what I'm saying.
Right.
I'm not saying this race sucks, this race is terrible. I know how to nuance it to where it's just funny. But just saying certain words triggers, like saying like white, black, brown. It's like, why are you even bringing it up? I'm like, it's look, I don't get oppressed every day.
Right.
It's a part of my life.
Yeah.
It
impacts an overall outlook and mentality in general. One of the things that's so interesting too is like right now the idea of mental health has been more above board than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so if we're acknowledging that that's a thing, can we not acknowledge what all this oppression does to a group of people?
Yeah.
To have so many relatives in prison and not operate? Yeah. Can we not like be realistic about this stuff?
Yeah.
The last pod I did with Michael Young, one of the greatest Texas Rangers of all time.
Yeah.
And we talked about the idea of what the word privilege means.
Yeah.
And how so many white people freak out if you use the word. It's like... Yeah. Just acknowledge it.
Yeah.
We're not signaling you out and saying, okay, you owe the world everything. It's like, don't be a part of the effing problem.
I always say, like, I do a bit about it, actually, where privilege, the word privilege is a problem because people associate privilege like the beginning of DuckTales. Remember when Scrooge McDuck is like has no pants and he jumps into a mountain of coins?
That's
not privilege because it's always like, I'm poor, I don't make money. It's not privilege. We're talking about benefits. Like the fact that like if a white person walked into a place and there were 80 Indian people, they would assume, okay, it must be a private party. Let's leave.
Right.
That's
right.
My everyday is the opposite of that.
Right.
If I only went to places that only have Indian people, I would be at my parents' house or like a CompUSA. Do you know what I mean? That's it. There's only two places I could go
right.
where I'm not the minority.
Right.
But I don't see it that way. Like, I see it that way for writing purposes, but I don't think that's what the benefit is you can go anywhere and you're not the minority. And
I totally hear what you're saying. Yeah. And this is not in any way, please don't want anyone to take this as a woe is me thing, because it's not.
Okay.
I did this willingly. I went into environments where I was the minority because I wanted to be there.
Okay.
And specifically early 90s being in a rap group.
Well, that's what's great about music. Nobody cares.
No.
Like, that whole 90s hip hop scene, like my first concert was Souls of Mischief, De La Soul, Tribe Called Quest at the Bomb Factory.
I was at that show.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Because I was a huge Souls of Mischief fan.
You might have been in high school then, right?
That was my senior year, I think.
Yeah.
It was mind-blowing. No, sophomore year. It was mind-blowing to me. That was when Midnight Marauders came out.
Yeah.
Mind State came out. 93 Jump Finney came
Such
out.
Such great records.
And nobody's looking at me like this goofy, nerdy Indian kid. They were just like, no, it's just music. It brings people together. There's something about... I think the thing with comedy is people think it's so easy because everybody's made somebody laugh at some point.
Right.
Every single person has.
Right.
And so they know what that rush feels like.
It's yeah.
Like, well, I do that. I can do that. Because I've made people, not on that level. Chappelle has fans, but I'm making strangers laugh. They don't know me.
They're, right.
How do I connect to them?
Right.
And the only connection Chappelle knows is, you all know I'm famous, so I'm going to say some things that only a famous guy can get away with.
Yeah.
Because little Paul Varghese and Deep Ellum can't get away with this stuff. It doesn't mean that he's better than me. It's just he has this platform.
It's such a hard grind, really, like whether you're in a band or,
anything artistic.
It's hard to get to where it's your career.
Yeah. I mean, dude, like I love doing it. I'm nowhere close to where he is, but I understand why he can get away with stuff that I can't. Why Chris Rock can say the things he does. It doesn't mean he's braver. He just has cachet.
You know what's so interesting, too, about Chris Rock, for me at least, I think it's interesting, is I thought he was an incredibly mediocre dude. And then he did Bring the Pain. I was like, man, that might have been the best hour of television I think I've ever fucking seen.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't realize what he had.
Yeah.
And when I saw what he had, man, he was dropping bombs. And it was incredible.
Yeah. Bigger and Blacker, that's one right after that,
is
my favorite one. That's the one about... we should get everybody should have free guns, but every bullet should cost $50,000.
Right. I remember that now.
Yeah,
Chappelle's got a great bit where he said the only way we can get these laws changed is for every able-bodied black person to register for a gun.
Yeah.
Then we'll get some changes on that front.
Yeah, I love that stuff, but also like stand up reflects the culture. Like the reason Bring the Pain is awesome and it wouldn't probably translate now is because people have to remember the Clinton Lewinsky scandal because that's what blew up.
Oh, and OJ and Marion Barry, like it was so ripe for that.
That what do you think about Eddie Murphy coming back then? I have very mixed feelings about it.
Okay, so again, this is just really more about my age. When I was a seventh or eighth grader, he came in concert.
Okay.
Okay, doing the Delirious stuff.
Okay.
Okay. And that was like, I didn't get to go.
Of course not.
My buddy Stacy Curtis went, and I just thought he was the greatest person alive because he got to see Eddie Murphy do overtly homophobic jokes and, I mean, stuff that would quote-unquote never fly now.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I quit really caring about Eddie Murphy because he just did a bunch of stuff that didn't. But, dude, the dude's insanely talented.
Yeah.
And so for him to want to, at this point in his career, come back and do this, I can't effing wait. He doesn't need money for this.
Yeah.
Like, why would he want to do this if it's not to go out there and detonate bombs?
I don't know.
Are you worried?
I don't think it's going to. I think it's going to be. The hype is so big. Like, we talk, going back to my grandfather, dead at 73.
Uh-huh.
He's been dead for, what, 46 years?
Uh-huh.
And now he's like, you know, he flipped a switch when God said, let there be light. He's like that big. The expectations for Eddie Murphy are going to be humongous.
What if he lives up to him?
There's no way, dude. Because remember, he was never really doing anything social commentary anyway. He was just talking about, he's going to have to talk about being a celebrity. The first 20 minutes are going to be about who he's met. It's going to be almost like Kathy Griffin. Like, I did this, and I did this movie, and I did, because that's been his life for, you think he really cares about Black Lives Matter or anything?
Okay, so that's real interesting, too, from another thing, because I know you care about this stuff as much as I do. Why so few rappers have better than two or three records that are any good? Because their first record or their first two records is there's an urgency to it.
Well, it's what you've been building up your whole life.
Right. Yeah. And once you like get treated the way celebrities get treated, boy, that urgency really. And so like I look at Eminem, and I'm not an Eminem fan.
Okay.
Like, I respect the shit out of him. I think he's amazing. But, like, I can't, you know, put on the... And I was like, I don't want to hear you hack up your wife. I don't really... And, like, as much as I like N.W.A., the record they made when Cube left is utter trash.
Yeah.
Like, I can't do that.
Well, I haven't listened to any Tribe albums since Midnight Marauders.
Well, okay, so my point is is that, you know, the urgency of an artist is so paramount to connecting to their stuff.
Of course.
If you're a person that just, you know, there's a lot of people that just want to have a nice tune on in the background. I'm not that kind of person.
Okay.
Like, I connect to something or I don't.
Yeah, same here.
And it's got to mean something to me.
Yeah, I'll play it till I'm sick of it.
Right.
Yeah.
And so when you have that initial urgency, there's something to latch on to.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, if I was an Eminem fan, he had so much angst and he held on to that angst. I think it kept him relevant longer because usually people that attain a certain status can let go of the angst, and he never could.
Yeah.
And then when he got sober, quite frankly, all the songs really sucked.
Yeah.
I know that sounds, but I'm sorry. It's like once he evened out, what was the driving force to go, oh my God, this person is really making me feel something.
Yeah.
You know? And so, you know, with rap a lot of times it's party jams and all that stuff is cool. I thought Jay-Z's record, that 444 that he made, I thought that record was fucking incredible.
Okay.
And I thought it was the best record he had made since Reasonable Doubt. And it's because he almost lost his wife. And then he had to go out there and lay it all out there and go, man, I almost ruined my life. And so it suddenly there was an urgency there or an import that I could connect to beyond, look at how fucking dope all these cars are. Look at how big my house. I can't. There's no urgency. There's nothing to connect to for me there.
Do you... So I am like the biggest Outkast fan ever.
I think they're incredible.
Now I don't like what was the one? Idlewild? I didn't listen to it.
Okay, nobody listens to that. That's so, like Prince's. What's the movie he made?
Paisley Park.
Graffiti Bridge.
Graffiti Bridge. Yeah.
Right.
Those first five albums, though, you can't like that five album run. There's nothing close to it.
Pound for pound,
all five.
Yeah.
No way. They all sound different. But he also took their time between all of them. They took like 3-4 years apart, like, and he doesn't want to do music anymore. I don't blame him. Like,
he doesn't have anything to say, really. Like,
he already made money. He has generational wealth,
right?
Why? What does he have to say? Like, if I ever made like Chappelle money, you'll never see me again. Like, I don't.
Right.
What would I get angry about?
Okay, that's another thing I wanted to talk to you. I love this. I love that you brought this up.
Okay.
Because this is why I think, and again, I might be over glorifying Dave and making him seem like he's the most brilliant genius ever. But in that same Rick Rubin special, Gerard Carmichael was talking about, if I'm going to feel this, I have to go out on stage and say something that's dangerous.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'm not feeling my art. Okay. And there's another great line in there where Rick Rubin goes, you know, if you go out there and you make something that everybody likes, it's probably pretty mediocre or else everybody wouldn't like it.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to make something that upsets people and makes other people love it, or there's no urgency to it. There's nothing important about it.
Yeah.
And so I felt like, I mean, again, I'm caping for the guy, but I felt like he's like, oh shit, it's like this. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, because there's an overriding theme to it. It not only is it called Sticks and Stones.
Yeah.
But dude, he's talking about Judgment Day and not caring about his own destruction. I feel like I was watching a guy going, I'm willing to light myself on fire. Let's see what happens. But he's also rich enough to be able to withstand it if it did get too hot.
Of course. Yeah, exactly. He's talked about one of the reasons he left too is he can't. They laugh at everything he says.
Yeah.
They go crazy. Anything he said. There's a couple of mediocre punchlines. There's a handful of mediocre punchlines in there, but they are losing it. I mean, falling out of their chairs.
He's preaching to the choir, baby.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
But he deserves that choir. He earned those stakes. So I get it in the sense of like, yeah, I need a challenge. So let me. But even then, he's not really poking the anthill. Like I said, he apologizes for everything. You know.
Does his shit still move you? Like as an artist, as someone, you understand the art. You've performed the art. You know what it takes. Does he still move you?
I wasn't blown away by it, but it didn't suck.
Yeah.
But I feel like, again, going back to social media, all the comics, if you don't think it's great, then you don't get it. I'm like, it can be good.
Yeah.
Not everything has to be epic.
Right.
Like, it's fine.
right.
But like,
right.
I love Roy Wood Jr. So he's the guy in The Daily Show.
Okay. I haven't seen his stuff.
He has two specials, two albums, and they're flawless. They're both completely flawless.
Mm-hmm.
And people know him because of Daily Show, but he can't sell out Verizon, and that's not his fault.
Yeah.
But those two albums are easily the best two albums I've heard in the last 5 years.
So if I'm saying, I need Roy Wood Jr., I'll check him out. Anybody else you feel like I need to check out?
I mean, on the complete different spectrum, Chad Daniels is really good, but he's straight white guy, middle age in Minnesota, but it's him raising kids, but it's not family humor. It's him like being like super evil. But he justifies it because anytime he says something, he'll say to the crowd, "Oh, I can feel you tense up. Let me tell you why it's wrong. You tensed up." He's kind of Daniel Tosh in that sense.
Okay,
but everything's around his family. But then if you go like completely, you want to like listen with your kids. I mean, Jim Gaffigan is like legitimately good.
Yeah,
he doesn't ruffle any feathers, but he's doing like 30 minutes on horses. And as many people think it might be mild, it's hard to write even 2 minutes on horses, let alone 20 minutes. Then like Bill Burr's still my favorite.
He's so consistently amazing. Yeah.
I wish Greg Giraldo was still alive. He was my favorite before everybody else. But Burr's special drops. Well, I guess that would be. We're not going to air this tonight, but it would be tomorrow tonight.
Oh really?
Yeah.
The new Netflix special.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he talks about cancel culture in there.
Oh wow.
I think the angle is something like if you lasted as a celebrity till now. Chances are something you said in the 70s. If you started in the 70s and you're still relevant now, it's going to come back and bite you.
Yeah.
Just because of the climate.
Right.
You know? But Burr's great. I like such a range of stuff, like even musically. So like comedically, I'm all over the place. So like Wanda Sykes' new special is great.
What is it on?
It is on, is it on Amazon or Hulu? I can't remember. They all blend together.
Right.
Nate Bargatze is really good.
I'm unfamiliar.
He's like super, super subtle Tennessee kid. But he'll do stuff like, I'm going to butcher the bit, but he'll do stuff about like going to like, he lives in Tennessee. He's a Vanderbilt fan. He went to a Vanderbilt bowl game, but they got there so early. He gave the tickets and they let him in, but he's like, no, I'm waiting for my friends. So he was there like 2 hours before, just even before they even opened the concession stand, just kind of sitting there like he's waiting for an iPhone. You know what I mean? And his seats are at the top right. row. So he's like looking over the stadium, seeing his friends, like waving them over because he can't get out because there's no ins and outs. It's like stuff like that. But then I can listen to, Chappelle, and he's just as relevant.
All right. Do you have any Chappelle interaction stories?
I don't.
It's a loaded question because I got a really good one.
Okay. You're going to easily beat me. Well, I mean, when we performed in Dallas, we went to Sfuzzi back when Sfuzzi was around.
The pizza place.
Yeah. That was where the after party was. And I've never been to, again, talking about iconic stuff. It was me, his road manager, him, and my cousin. Who's flirting with my cousin, and we're all four sitting there. In fact, shout out to Rena. She's the one that got me the Austin show because he was like, "You going to come to Austin with us, with me?" And she's like, "I can't come. I got to work, but you should take my cousin. He just opened. Who's that? He's the guy that just opened for you." And he was like, "Yeah, I'll take him.
He's the guy sitting right there."
She's like, "Yeah, I'll take him if you come." And she never showed up, but I got to go. So it was fun for me.
That's awesome.
But I remember sitting there at VIP and Sfuzzi, which VIP was literally just three chairs, sofas looking at each other.
Right.
There's no rope. There's security. And it's just people staring at us, staring at each other. You know what I mean? Like, there's no, like, wall, nothing. It's just, like, how we are. Uh-huh. Just imagine, like, 50 other people just looking at us, drink.
Oh my God, that's the worst.
So it's creepy.
Yeah.
But that's, and I have nothing outside of that. I mean, Austin, I think Danny Trejo came by to watch the show or whatever. But
do you have a machete or an axe or anything?
He's actually really short too, man. But
is that right?
He came in a wife beater, dude. Like, I'm like, that was his, I want to see him like in a suit.
Yeah.
His funeral, maybe.
Right.
But I couldn't say anything to him. I was taller than him, but he's like, you know, built like a brick.
He's a big dude.
So he doesn't care about me. He just walked by. But yeah, I have more Joan Rivers stories than
okay,
Dave Chappelle.
Okay. I'll give you mine because you'll love this because you're a hip hop head.
Okay.
So back when I was still making hip hop and DJing and doing these sorts of things, he was on tour doing the block party.
Okay.
So they would have basically a soul review in different cities. And so at the time, Erica, who I've known since before she was famous, and I was in the Cannabinoids at one point,
that's
all this
awesome
stuff.
Okay.
She owned the Black Forest Theater over there on MLK. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so she was hosting Dave's block party.
Okay.
And so it was Erica and Talib Kweli and Dave Chappelle. Okay. I don't know if you have you been to the Black Forest Theater?
Yeah, I saw Badu there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So the backstage area is basically a side closet that's about 8 feet by 5 feet.
Okay.
That's backstage.
She renovated it though, right?
She renovated it, but this is right off the stage.
Okay.
So this is one of the coolest things she's ever done for me. So okay. I was the house DJ that
awesome.
Night.
Awesome. Okay.
So I'm on stage, on the corner of the stage, playing records, and you know, there's like this really cool Dave Chappelle block party poster where it says DJ Skin, Hydroponic Sound System, all this crap.
Dope. Okay.
But you're like, I want to talk to this person so bad, but I'm nervous.
Okay.
I don't know how to talk to this person.
Okay.
So we're backstage and I'm standing about 5 feet away from him.
Okay.
And he's rolling up a joint and I'm just like, oh my God, do I say anything? Do I say anything? And right at that moment, Talib Kweli, who is on the other side of this small little room, and I've been around a lot of rappers, so I'm not starstruck by him, even though I think he's incredibly dope. He's chatting up some gal, and he looks down at my feet, goes, damn, those kicks are nice. Okay. And I'm wearing these low-top Adidas, and they're gray and red and white, and they're really nice, and they're just like one-offs, like I bought them online. And so I look down at my shoes, and then I look up, and Dave's looking right back. Like, he looked down at my shoes, and it looked right at me, right?
Uh-huh.
And so he's looking at me. I'm looking eye to eye, and he's holding a joint, and I go, man, I'm sorry to go all broke back on you, but can I take a picture with you?
Yeah.
And he died laughing.
Oh, that's
like hilarious. He thought that was really funny. I don't know. Is that offensive now? Can we say that now? I don't know.
We already did.
But we already did. So he goes like, hell yeah, bleep, I'll take a picture with you, you know? And so that was like my, and it would have never happened because I was standing 4 or 5 feet from him. But if Talib Kweli had not done that, I wouldn't have had the nuts to say anything to him because I was trying to be respectful of his space I was already invading.
Yeah.
Kind of like you're talking about those people standing there watching you guys drink.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like, I know I want to tell this person I think he's great, but I don't want to offend him and I don't know how to do all this.
Two things. And this, again, feel free to edit any of this stuff out. It's like when, do you remember the first time you met Dirk?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Were you doing radio at the time?
We were doing part-time radio.
Okay.
Yeah, we were doing part-time. Right? We were like the weekend show and the mass
post-game
show.
So he met you knowing that you did radio, though, or no?
I think he recognized. So the first time I had an individual interaction with him was he was leaving the Mavs office and I was showing up there.
Okay.
And so we were just out there.
Yeah, I gotcha.
You know, and so I don't know if, for a good while, I was like, does he know that I'm Skin that does this? I just don't know. And I just didn't want to get up in his space.
Yeah.
And to your point, I think I know where you're going here.
Yeah.
I've known him forever now, and I've hosted some charity events for him and all these things, but I'm still apprehensive of getting in his space because he's Dirk.
I've never been, and that's what the other thing with comics, you talk about like famous people, like athletes are way more famous than entertainers, dude. I don't care how big Chappelle is, Dirk is already way past, and that's just, not, and that's just not him. That's almost every big athlete in the city. It's impossible.
Much less one of the greatest to ever play a sport.
Yeah, that too. But he's the only one that I've known, you know.
And we should just say that you've performed for Dirk.
Yeah, I did. His wife asked me to perform at his birthday party, which was another podcast altogether.
That's incredible.
I think I pissed off a Nobel Prize winner in there because he didn't speak English. But they were there. Yeah, it was like me and, you know, Steiny's there and Madonna's there and Holger's there. I spent the whole night talking to Holger.
Which is fun, dude.
I mean, he doesn't know who I am. He's asking me about stand-up and how this works, and I'm like, well, why am I here? Like, I have like a twin bed. Why am I here, right? But with Dirk, every time when he's been to shows, when I first met him, I was like, I don't want to be a fan. I just want to be like, hey, but I don't know what to talk to him about because, right. But we never talk about sports. Like I don't, we just, he loves stand-up. So we just talk about stand-up and we talk about people we know and that's it. Or we make fun of a mutual friend.
Right.
And so I was apprehensive because of that. I'm like, he must get people bugging him all the time. So I don't want to be that dude.
Yeah.
So it helped that we met in the context of what I do. Because he approached me.
Yeah.
But I remember when...
And that puts you at ease.
Totally.
To a degree. Yeah, I mean, you're still standing in the shadows of greatness, but...
But when, I mean, when you're performing, you see him. He can't... He kind of sticks out when he's sitting in the audience.
And he's got some big old teeth because they got knocked out, so he's got those fake chompers there.
Like, I mean, him sitting down is as tall as me standing up. So, like, you see that. You're like, oh, is he laughing at stuff? Because I remember this so well because I remember performing for the Cowboys, Sean Lee's rookie year.
Okay.
They did some Cowboys post show at the Arlington Improv. They had just opened. Like, hey, can you headline the show? The rookies are going to be there. And they did like a, I forgot who it was, but they did some Cowboys show before that. And then everybody has to stay there and watch me do an hour. Okay, this is, I don't remember what rookie year it was. But you're sitting there, and like, granted, these guys are younger than me, but still, it's like, I hope these dudes think I'm funny, man. Like,
right.
And like, he didn't laugh at anything. I held that grudge for so long. I'm like, he doesn't think anything I say is
funny. Was mad because he wasn't watching film. He's like, man, I'm not watching film right now. He's actually a really great dude.
I'm sure he is. But I remember running into him, seeing him at Tete on.
Oh,
on,
yeah.
I love Tete.
So great spot.
And I remember sitting there. I was with the girl that was taking the time, and I was like, I want to say something to him because he didn't laugh at my stupid jokes, whatever. But like,
did you say something to him?
No, I didn't. Because again, I don't know how to approach those things. So with athletes, I don't, like, at least with comics, I can always go like, hey, how you doing? Blah, blah, blah. With athletes, I mean, I've never been an athlete in my life. I don't know what to say. I mean, obviously it helps that you're the sideline guy. So you can, you have an opening. And now with being in radio, you have an opening. I have no opening to these guys. You know what I mean? So, I mean, Berea came to a show 3 weeks ago.
Did he really?
I don't know what to say. I mean, I hope he had fun, but... I don't know.
He's a fun guy, so he probably had fun.
Yeah.
He probably rolled over his buddy Braulio.
But I don't know what to say, though. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know. But, hey, big, I don't know. I don't want to be that cheesy guy.
Why don't you just go, man, 2011, most kick-ass year of my life. Thanks, bro.
Yeah.
You know, but you're right, though. Especially when you respect someone so much, you think about their space.
Yeah.
And you're like, man, I don't want to be the guy to upset his space or his vibe. Yeah. I don't want
to be the stereotypical guy who asks the same thing. It's like when you see the hot girl at the bar when you're single, you're like, you don't want to say, oh, you're stunning. You mm-hmm. like how else can I talk about blah blah blah. So I'd rather them approach me. But going back to Chappelle real quick.
Yeah.
If he took out the N-word, do you think people would laugh as much?
So
it felt like a crutch when I was
I love this topic. Okay. Especially like being a white guy sitting there laughing at that material. Mm-hmm. Because there is also like everything that you've built up through your years of observing stuff and taking stuff in that leads you somewhere. Mm-hmm. And there's a certain kind of delivery that releases the funny.
Yeah.
You know, because he does a very, very poignant bit about, you know, saying the F word and being chastised for that, but not being chastised for the N word. And it's that whole thing too, about the way people quote unquote see you and see all of these things.
Yeah.
But his delivery is so funny that it's the way he is saying it. I think there is humor in that, but I also think we've been trained to laugh at that style.
Yeah.
Richard Pryor, especially.
It feels like a crutch.
Yeah.
Because the joke doesn't need it.
Right.
Unless he's talking about the actual word, it's a crutch. Like, I know if I say the word, like, let's say I'm doing a joke about Starbucks, and I said this, and then the lady said this, and I was like, bitch, I want a latte. You're always going to get a laugh at the word bitch.
Right.
When the joke is really about latte.
Right.
And so I always...
No, you're right, and he does that too.
A lot.
He said that about Dream Hampton on that R. Kelly special.
Yeah, I mean, if he took that out, would they still laugh? You know, because I feel like what helped me, not that I'm anywhere career-wise, but what helped me was understanding the nuance of reactions and laughs. Like, mm-hmm. I know when I get a gut laugh, which is why I try to write really creative stuff, but I know that if I drop this word right here, I can crush it. But then it has nothing to do with the joke. It's just the word.
Yeah.
And with the N-word, I think it's like, it's always very strange when I see, like, the white guys in the audience at the Chappelle thing, like, losing it when he says it. Almost like, and again, I'm reading too much into it. It almost feels like, oh, I can't believe, like, I can laugh at that too.
Right.
Because you always hear that argument. Everybody has that, you know, when you listen to hip hop, or you hear these guys are like, well, why can't I, how come I can't say the word? Mm-hmm. Well, It's because you think Chappelle and Chris Rock are like your buddies.
Yeah.
They're not your buddies, dude.
Right, right.
But it's a crutch. It's a crutch word. You know, there's certain crutches that I have. You know, like some certain comments, if you bug out your eyes, you squat over, everybody mm-hmm. laughs. Or if you know, Cat Williams falls down, people lose it. It's just, yeah. It has nothing to do with the joke, though.
But right. It's the projection of the joke.
Yeah. So I've always wondered, I mean, watching it again this morning, I was like, he should take those words out, but I don't know if those jokes last on their own without it.
Well, that's a good point, too, though, because that character or that projection, I don't want to say character, but that projection is funny.
Because that's how he is off stage, right? What you remember?
So the little bit that I was around him, and it was a very little bit, but, you know, I know people that know him very well.
Yeah.
That is the whole thing amplified.
Okay.
Like, in other words,
I mean, I know he's shy. I know he's quiet.
Right.
Interaction with him, all he said was, hey, I heard them laughing, so you must be good. That was the Dallas. It was in Dallas. And we talked a little bit afterwards at the party, but I don't know him.
That, to me, it's like that's part of the performance aspect of it. There's the jokes and there's the performance aspect.
Okay.
And that's the performance aspect. Okay. And it's interesting, the idea of a crutch, too.
Yeah.
Because ultimately, you're just trying to get as many laughs as you can, right?
Exactly. Yeah, but
or is that the equivalent to, hey, I went ahead and put in the string section on the chorus because I know it's always going to make it more palatable.
It's like, remember the '80s when any like white band wanted like cred, they would always book a black choir.
Yeah.
Like,
remember, oh my like, God. Foreigner did that.
Madonna did like a prayer. Yes, that's what they would always have to show them.
Right.
You know, in robes.
Right. And they were just right on beat. Yeah. Boy, this person is so woke, but that thing hadn't happened for 20 years, so you don't know what that means right now. We'll get to that later.
Yeah. So that's what that reminds me of. But like, I mean, that's just like little critical things. Like, I don't think the audience knows, but I think they're almost like going back to the Ron White punchline indicator, like mm-hmm. drinking the whiskey. The audience doesn't know that. They just, oh, that's so hilarious. I'm like, if you took away that whiskey, would you?
It's you can't even do it, right? You can't even make your mind go there. But is it as funny if he took all that out? And then what does he replace it with when he's addressing this concept of that?
Yeah, which is why, I mean, the comics here in the city, we always talk about it, is like, that means the joke's not strong enough. If you take it out and it doesn't work, that like whether it be a slur or a cuss word, if it doesn't stand on its own, it doesn't work. Now, if you know it worked and you want to add that to amplify it, then mm-hmm. fine. But like, look, Chris Rock's bullet control, he didn't really cuss in that.
Okay, so let's go back to this. What do you think about Tracy Morgan?
I've never found him funny, dude.
So he makes me howl laugh.
Okay.
And it's because to me, he's almost like the old dirty bastard of comedy.
Okay. Okay.
Like,
I get it.
If you just took old dirty's rhymes and looked at them on a paper, you'd be like, what?
Yeah.
But the way he performs them are incredible. Okay. The guy's brilliant.
So he's more delivery than substance, is what you mean.
Yeah, but I'm saying is the delivery adds substance to what he's saying.
Yeah.
Because it's a projection of these things.
Yeah.
And so Tracy Morgan, one of the funniest things I've ever seen, and I don't really find this guy funny, but I went and saw Jay Moore because we had him in studio at ESPN.
He does the Tracy Morgan, doesn't he? Does he do a Tracy Morgan?
His Tracy Morgan's insanely funny.
Okay.
It's insanely funny. And he ended the show with a 10-minute story about going to an all-black strip club with Tracy Morgan.
Okay.
And it's someone who, you know, when I was in my rap days, would go to places where I was one of three or four white dudes.
Yeah.
You know, and that was kind of what I was talking about earlier. It's like, if I go into that environment, I have to go into that environment respectful of what that environment is.
Of course.
It's not about me walking in going, well, here's the way I think things should go down. You're in this environment. You respect this environment. You adhere to this environment.
Totally, yeah.
And so he's talking about being there and Tracy Morgan is wild and shirtless and ordering $300 bottles of champagne and running up this tab. And then in the middle of it, Tracy Morgan starts a fight.
Okay.
And Jay Moore's like, holy F. And I had this experience, Paul, where I went and saw Ice Cube and Public Enemy and Queen Latifah in Houston in 1990 at the Summit in Houston.
Okay.
So there's 15,000, 16,000 people there and maybe 200 of them are white.
Okay.
All right. So that's for me, that felt like tension. Okay. I'm 19 years old.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
And I'll never forget this on the concourse level.
Okay.
About 200 feet away from me, a fight breaks out.
Okay.
And there's a wave of fist coming at me, almost like the wave in sporting events. Yeah, and my thought is, they're going to destroy me.
Yeah.
And so I turned and I ran out of that venue.
Okay.
I ran.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
And the reason being, it's like self-preservation.
I got you.
I know if a fight breaks out, there's a bunch of people that just want to destroy this little white guy.
Okay.
And so Jay Moore's talking about the fight breaking out and him being like, OS, and he runs to get out of that strip club as fast as he can. Because when it jumps off, he's a target.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the first target,
right?
And so that's being respectful of your environment.
Yeah.
So he runs out, and he says he turns around, and this bouncer takes, you know, kicks the door open and throws a shirtless Tracy Morgan, who's got blood running down his face and has gotten the crap beat out of him, throws him out into the street.
Okay.
And he says, and he does a perfect Tracy Morgan imitation. And so Tracy's laying in a hump in the street and laying in a pile of street. And Jay's like, you okay? You okay? And he gets up and he goes, Jay Moore, that's how you don't pay your tab at a strip club.
Oh, that's hilarious.
He set it up great. And the imitation's incredible.
That's hilarious.
But the reason that it works is because of this character that Tracy Morgan is.
Yeah.
And it's the character that's funny. And dude, he is in control of that character, and he knows that character is funny.
So, you know, like the rep with him when I started was, because I would do sets in New York for a little bit, the rep was like, because he hadn't gotten 30 Rock at that time. He was on SNL. He was just bombing at these mics. And like the rep was, you know, maybe he would get a big one theater gig for, I mean, I don't know what, he had a couple of Comedy Central specials, but they were terrible. He would just... But then he got on 30 Rock, and that character was for him.
And they put him, they made that character shine.
Yeah.
And you saw the genius of it.
Yeah. But up until then, he was
bombed.
Just left and right.
Dude, and part of it is, I think that's funny. And so, did you see the last ESPYs? Which is a terrible question because nobody watches the ESPYs.
Was that the... No,
Tracy Morgan was the host.
Okay, Steve Harvey hosted the NBA Awards.
Right.
Yeah.
So I didn't watch it because it's the ESPYs.
Yeah.
And if it's not about Dirk, I ain't watching the damn ESPYs.
Yeah.
So the next day on my station, there's all this talk about, man, Tracy Morgan was horrible.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, wow, that sucks. I think he's funny. So we played clips.
Uh-huh.
And I died laughing at every one of them. I was like, this is funny. What? Okay. This isn't funny?
Yeah.
And so you either... think that character is funny because he's not doing material.
Yeah,
you know, there's material there, but it's not about the material. It's about the presentation of the material. Same with Norm MacDonald.
Yeah.
Like, I love Norm MacDonald. There's people that effing hate Norm MacDonald.
Yeah.
He makes me howl laugh.
Okay.
I can't stop laughing at him because I think that character he's doing is funny.
I think it's definitely blurred a line because I can't imagine being those dudes in public.
Like, right. When
they've got to be on
all the time.
All times,
all the time.
You know, I've never worked with Chris Rock, but I've heard stories through Wanda Sykes about how he's super shy on stage. He's kind of a recluse, you know. And I don't blame him because if he was over at Community, they'd be like, "Oh my, Chris Rock's here!"
Right.
And now he's got to like, come on, say something funny.
Right.
You know, you're going to get that. And they get it on a level, you know, 5,000 times more than I do.
Right.
So I can't imagine having to be on all the time, which is probably why Tracy is a little nuts. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I mean, I know Kevin, you know, Kevin Hart's been, I don't know Kevin Hart, but I know that he's been kind of going off the rails, literally off the rails. But but he's been kind of going a little bit crazy too, just because you have to be the guy that jumps in the Rock's arms every time they see you. You've got to be,
right.
You've got to be on. It's got to be annoying after a while. At that level, it's got to be ridiculous.
I remember this from... God, I can't remember if it was a 2020 from the 80s or whatever, but it was Eddie Murphy and Bill, and he was talking about him and Bill Cosby being in Bill Cosby's office whispering about the way some white people had treated him.
Uh-huh.
And they're like, we are in your office whispering right now.
Yeah.
And there's this thing about, especially, you know, because there are so many, whether it's athletes or actors or whatever, but African Americans that have achieved all this fame and notoriety, and then they suddenly get accepted in a different way, and they're conflicted. Look what happened to Dave. Look what happened to Lauryn Hill.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a whole litany of them.
Of course, of course.
Because it's like, well, why am I being treated like this now? And the revelation of how really jacked up it is, they have to experience it in a whole new way.
You know, it's on a much smaller level, on my level. Like, I've never been the guy that was motivated by, oh, nobody talked to me in high school, I'm going to be famous and show them. I was always like, I was way cuter and way nicer in high school and college. You didn't talk to me then, and now you want to talk to me?
Yeah.
Like, this is, I better just enjoy it while it lasts, because you had no idea. I was way cooler and nicer and not jaded back then. I never looked at it as like, now I'm going to it is a weird thing, because you're older and you were always the same person, and now all of a sudden everybody likes you. The same people who won't take your phone calls. I mean, I know that from a small level, LA is very much like high school. Like, if we went to LA right now, I would be able to talk to the comics until somebody more important comes in the room. And then you get, then you're not the popular kid.
Right.
And Hollywood, you know, everybody thinks you go out to LA and you can go make it. Well, if the LA is the popular girl, and if you're not what she's into, you got to wait. You got to like do your thing to get the popular girl's attention. And I'm like, I'm a grown dude. Like,
that what? Hustle is so ridiculous.
You left high school thinking you would never have to go through that again.
Yeah.
And showbiz is why people end up going crazy. And like Robin Williams, all these guys like just killing themselves. Like what he talks about Anthony Bourdain. It's just,
yeah.
you're not the most relevant person in the room, you know? And again, going back to Dirk, he doesn't care about stuff like that.
No.
He's such an anomaly.
That's part of his one tiny little aspect of all these little pieces of brilliance that make up what he is.
Yeah.
All right, so wrapping this thing up, give the Dave special a grade and give a grade compared to Dave or just compared to just walking in and turning on a Netflix special.
Definitely watch it. And if you don't enjoy it, if you like to show, then you'll like the special. I mean, I would give it a B. Mm-hmm. Like my A is, if you want to know my standard, A is Roy Wood's special. He has two of them. And the one that's about, there's one on HBO coming out on October 4th called, it's from Gary Goldman, who is come from Boston. He has a Judd Apatow produced it.
Okay.
And I toured with him in June, so I've seen the special. And it's actually about mental health, but it's not a self-help encouraging one-man show. He's just doing a set.
Is this coming up on HBO?
Yeah, the first week of October.
Okay, I saw a commercial for that.
Calls him sitting with his mom, showing going through, and that's just the indie film aspect
of it.
But the actual special is really, really good. It's really smart stuff. But again, just I think people need to realize that comedy is like music. Like there's the Red Hot Chili Peppers and there's Outkast and there's, mm-hmm. you know, there's Little Brother and then there's Kings of Leon. And you don't have to like all of them.
Right.
Like, it would be nice if you could like Jim Gaffigan and Chris Rock, but those fans probably don't intersect at all. And right. that's not a racial thing. It's just I like my stand up this way. But so don't think just because you don't like Dave Chappelle that he sucks. It's like it's art. You know, anybody who's listened to this who's seen me, probably half of them probably don't even like me anyway, but I'm just doing what I do. So I think there's no stand-up special that crosses over to everybody, but Chappelle's the closest.
Mm-hmm.
Just go in there with an open mind.
Go in there with an open mind.
I hope you enjoyed that discussion with Paul. I mean, that sort of topic probably impacts me more than your average person, but I think it's interesting nonetheless, and I hope you got something out of it. Thanks to my friends at the Dallas Mavericks for letting us record down there. And big thanks to my homeboy, Mark Frito Friedman. We go way back. His crew over at Frito Nation was nice enough to produce this podcast for us this week. We'll be back in the future. We got stuff with Sophia Chang, former manager of the Wu-Tang Clan, Large Professor, and maybe even one podcast dedicated to some new music that I'm bumping. But we appreciate it when you subscribe and listen. And until next time, thanks to the GZA for the inspiration.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
It's a new year, and it's time to get your picks in 26 with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop Bob's for hot new styles featuring the latest technology, like stylish sleeper sectionals with immersive Bluetooth audio, relaxing reclining sofas with LED lighting, and fabulous fireplaces with mood lighting and speakers, all at Bob's everyday low prices, of course. So if you want to refresh your room for less, save big by stopping in or shopping online at Bob's Discount Furniture.
Get smoother, brighter skin instantly in one easy step. Dermalogica's Daily Microfoliant gives you the smooth, glowy skin you want without damaging your skin barrier. This gentle exfoliating powder activates with water to smooth out rough texture and brighten skin. It's powerful enough to deliver results, yet gentle enough to use every single day, even on sensitive skin. See the results for yourself. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at cart for an exclusive free gift with $65 purchase.
thy ticket, Lady Jennifer of Coolidge.
Well, many thanks, good sir. Heareth my Discover card.
They accept Discover at Renaissance fairs?
Yeah, they do here. Discover is accepted at the places I love to shop. Getteth with the times.
With the times?
You're playing the lute.
Yeah, and it sounds pretty good, right?
Discover is accepted at 99% of places that take credit cards nationwide. Based on the February 2025 Nielsen report.
Just got a new puppy or kitten. Congrats. But also, yikes. Between crates, beds, toys, treats, and those first few vet visits, you've probably already dropped a small fortune. Which is where Lemonade Pet Insurance comes in. It helps cover vet costs so you can focus on what's best for your new pet. The coverage is customizable, sign-up is quick and easy, and your claims are handled in as little as 3 seconds. Pro tip, Lemonade offers a package specifically for puppies and kittens. Get a quote at lemonade.com/pet. Your future self will thank you. Your pet won't. They don't know what insurance is.